Welcome to the Preacher Podcast. We are in the Christmas season, and today thinking once again about the series, The Gift of God, as we focus on the second Sunday after Christmas. I'm John Mitchell from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. With me, as they have been throughout this series and in the season of Advent too, the pastors of Our Redeemer Lutheran in Madison, Wisconsin, Philip Moldenhauer and Caleb Bassett. Phil and Caleb, good to be with you once again. Let's start with thinking about the foundation worship materials and the theme for this week in the Gift of God series. Caleb, could you just speak a little bit to that and remind guys of what the focus is today?
Yeah, the theme in the foundation series is in the theme of God's gift, this time God giving satisfaction. And specifically to those who patiently wait. That keys on the idea here that we'll talk about probably pretty thoroughly today about the idea of a fulfilled promise. The lessons for the Sunday talk about, or they call to mind, promises made by God. And then you have Zechariah's song, the Benedictus, where he is praising and thanking God for fulfilling the promise. So all that patient waiting has paid off, and in quite a handsome way, with the gift of God in Christ. So yeah, this Sunday focuses on that in particular.
Thank you. Let's remember what the other readings are appointed for the day. Phil, could you remind us, especially of the first and second reading today?
Yeah, the first reading is a snippet from the beginning of Genesis 17 and the giving of the covenant of circumcision, although circumcision itself doesn't yet, it's not in those first seven verses. This is keying off one of the things, the many things that Zechariah says in his song, where he mentions that the Lord is remembering the holy covenant he made with our father Abraham. So this it's Genesis 17, 1-7 is the reading. It's very short, and there's not a lot of context around it. If you were going to preach on it, you'd want to fill in a bunch of the details. But again, it's making that connection between this covenant the Lord made with Abraham and Zechariah's reference to it in the gospel. So that's the first reading. The second reading also is quite short. It's Galatians 4, 4-7. And I don't think this one surprises us at all coming in the season of Christmas, because it has that the time having fully come, God sending his son to be born of a woman born under law. So there's that whole idea of a promise that people long waited for, that is fulfilled. And it is, this is, by the way, this is Chronos time. It's not Kairos time. So it is like the allotted amount of time has finally passed and the moment has arrived and God has sent his son into the world. So that's the second reading, Galatians 4, 4-7.
Okay, then the focus for our attention today is the gospel of the day, which is, as Kayla mentioned, the song of Zechariah, Luke 1, 68-79. So thinking about highlights of this text as we anticipate preaching on this text, Caleb, could you just get our discussion started?
Yeah, so there's going to be, if you're following the foundation series, there's going to be this emphasis here that Zechariah is praising God for, I guess, out of joy that his, you know, that this patience has paid off. There's going to be, let's just work through the text and we can maybe talk about commenting on it more thoroughly in a bit. But you have, of course, again, the context is, you know, Zechariah has been unable to, he's unable to speak. And so you get this exuberant speaking now that comes out in the form of this this song. He's praising God for, among other things, you get the great things that is going to happen through his son John the Baptist, of course. But this fits common themes that you see here. You know, salvation from enemies. A new David being raised up. These messianic hopes that we know, of course, often got intermingled with political hopes for the nation of Israel. Yet these themes that we know so well are coming out here. And then he transitions after that, you know, God's promises of this, successor to David. And then you, my child, you will be a prophet of the Most High. You will go on before the Lord to prepare the way for him. So this is going to be hearkening back to, of course, the beginning of Advent, when we hear about John the Baptist, the voice in the wilderness. So it almost kind of bookends these two, or these two things kind of bookend the themes pretty nicely. So yeah, preaching on this will involve a lot of looking into sort of this poetic type elevated language. It's not simple prose. It's got some exuberance to it. It has some joy to it. It's not really didactic the way like in a, you know, an epistle might be. So it's going to take a slightly different mode to get at. Yeah, I guess that might be a quick preview of the text. We can talk a bit about those themes and how it relates to Advent too, because there's a bit of a tension here with the theme we're working with and how it relates to Advent. We can maybe talk about that as we get into how to preach the text.
Thank you. Yeah, continuing there, Phil.
Yeah, just one note that maybe is helpful in regards to what Caleb just said, that whole the dynamic between Advent and Christmas, is that you know there's just so much in this song. But if you're thinking about Christmas themes rather than Advent themes, you can, to a certain degree, let go of the verses 76 in particular, where Zechariah is focused on John and his ministry. You know, you've treated that in Advent. And my attention is drawn to verse 68 and to the specific word that Zechariah uses, that in the NIV it's translated, he has come to his people, but it's episkeptomai. So it's looking on, or in the sense of visiting somebody, like you're making a visit, you're paying a visit, you're going to actually see them face to face. And I think that in the lectionary, the logic of choosing this as the gospel for in the season of Christmas is that it's that word, it's that verse, that here in our flesh, God has visited us. He's come to see us, and we're going to want to emphasize that, so that the arrival of Christ rather than the arrival of John the Baptist, which we've treated. Now, the challenge is in connection with this great visitation that's found in Christ. You know, Zechariah's just, he kind of blows the roof off. And I just jotted down, I mean, there's like at least 10 major thoughts in this song, in these verses. So I think like any sort of preaching on this, yeah, it's not only going to have to deal with the fact that, you're dealing with poetry, but also just that this is really rich. And you're probably going to want to do some narrowing and just kind of hone in on a few or one of these ideas to craft your sermon around, in my opinion.
Right, right. Yeah, what comes to my mind too is that there are such vivid images and picturesque language throughout this song that maybe that's a way of narrowing it. If the preacher wants to select a couple of these images that really represent kind of the major thoughts of the song in some way, that could be sort of a skeleton. Caleb?
Yeah, I was thinking back to our other conversations in this series, and it's almost like, I don't want it to become our shtick where we're like, well, you know, you can't really get into too many details here because there's so much, and we're kind of been emphasizing again, you have to kind of get at some themes, you have to kind of unpack stuff. And it's like that might maybe a grander sweep. But then again, that does kind of fit when you get into something as significant as Christmas, the Christmas season. There's so much compressed into it, so much meaning, and you know, think of like all the time and the hopefulness and the waiting, that when it comes out in these sort of rich, poetic, and image laden ways, it's going to just lead your preaching to be that way, and I think that's okay at this time of year. Something else to note about the relationship here, and why I think it might be best not to emphasize so much the patiently waiting. Well, I mean, because, you know, Advent is the time of patiently waiting. and we're through that. So if you've been preaching, waiting patiently in the season of Advent or emphasizing that, and then you get to second Sunday after Christmas and you're like, and again, I will now emphasize patiently waiting, that could, you start to, yeah, it just might become too much at that point. Sure. So as I was thinking of this, one key emphasis might be, especially, to be sure, patience is a virtue in short supply. So preaching that emphasizes the reward of patience is going to be well received. But in this case, there's a good chance to describe that what we're waiting for is a particular fulfillment. And that, as Phil mentioned, is kind of leads off in verse 68. Why are we praising God? What has happened? He has come to his people and redeemed them. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's maybe more about the fulfillment than the waiting. And yet that's good, because, when you think about being patient, folks will talk about, you might say something like, I know God will work this out in the end. Okay. True statement. But that's a kind of spiritual advice that isn't always unique to Christianity. You'll hear people, whether they're Christian or not, say, stick with it, or, the universe will balance out, or something like that. But here, this is a different kind of just stick it out. This is, there was an oath that he swore to our father Abraham. And so that has come true. So it lets you also narrow in very closely on what is this, what have we been waiting for, and therefore what has arrived.
Yeah, this is more kind of when the waiting ends, right? Or when the waiting is, the thing that we've been waiting for are finally arriving. So kind of the completion of that Advent theme of waiting, what happens on the other side of it? And here we are kind of on the cusp of Zechariah receiving just the beginnings of the fulfillment of all that he has been promised and all that his ancestors have been promised to. Phil?
Yeah, I'm just thinking on the calendar that in 2024, at least, this falls on January 5th. So it's the 12th day of Christmas. And I wonder how many preachers will patiently wait for Epiphany to come, or will instead schedule, the Epiphany readings for that Sunday, which of course is just fine. But yeah, I mean, here's an interesting thought that Caleb's comments sparked in my mind, is just the whole concept of patiently waiting during Advent is not something that our society does very well. I think by the time we arrive at the 24th, and certainly by the 25th of December, we're kind of Christmased out. And a lot of people are, they're kind of done with it. And, in fact, I see Christmas trees getting thrown to the curb like on the 26th of December, So unfortunately, while we waited and waited and waited, once the fulfillment of the promise comes, we're kind of quick to dismiss and discard it. And in that regard, to dwell on, all the richness and the fullness of God's gift, and saying, hey, no, this is, this is the fulfillment of something that was prophesied long ago. And it was years and years and years before that time finally passed. And now it's here. So let's rejoice in it.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, good thoughts. By the way, I'm countercultural in that I leave my Christmas tree up and Christmas lights up for a long time. I won't tell you when I took my outdoor Christmas lights down finally after last Christmas. striking a blow against, the culture, or more likely just lazy and didn't want to take them down. But right, this is kind of a different take on that, and the date in which it falls, preachers will have to kind of work with that. But it does pose some intriguing possibilities to treat this homiletically. Well, let me ask: are there several images or parts of the psalm that would lend themselves, if you're maybe narrowing your focus or focusing more specifically on some of the parts of this song, some of the images, the word pictures, or the themes here that would lend themselves to kind of a law gospel message or encouragement for God's people who are waiting? What jumps out at you, Caleb?
So I was thinking there could also be a kind of, embedded in this is a sort of hard teaching that maybe contemporary people are not as accustomed to coping with, which is that not all the things that we hope for are going to come true in our lives. That if we are led to believe that, yeah, that this satisfaction is going to come in every case and in every circumstance at some point during the days of our life, that's probably not realistic. And so in some ways, you think of what Zechariah is at the back end of this time, there were generations of people who kind of had to keep a hope alive in a sense, like, you know, the sense of hope, the rumor of hope, whatever you want to call it. So that did take some degree of, that took some degree of effort. And it may be that at various times and places, Christians are called even today to persevere through awaiting. Even now, the ultimate hope that we're waiting for is something that we don't have yet. So this might be a way to have a, you know, more honest conversation about that, you know, to say this is a part of God's promises are, it's not that they're not going to happen. It's that we won't always enjoy their full completion to the degree that we may want, but this does not diminish hope.
Mm-hmm. Phil?
Yeah. Thinking about the specific images in this text, I'm going to just break it down into, I think, three kind of governing images. The first is one that I already mentioned, which is this visitation. That's really just verse 68. The Lord comes to his people and he redeems them. Verse 69 introduces the raising up of the horn of salvation for us, which is I think in some sense that image governs then the next verses all the way through 75. So it governs this idea of a strong ruler, this call that will deliver people from their enemies. And yet it ends with a little interesting twist in verses 74 and 75 that in so doing, the Lord enables us to serve him without fear and brings holiness and righteousness. So you got that horn, the horn of salvation, which is a really rich image. I don't know why, but I guess I think right away of Boromir's horn in The Lord of the Rings, but that's probably not the best thing to preach. Then the third image that really strikes me is the rising sun and the light coming to those in darkness, which is at the end of the song, verse 78 and 79. And that is, in my mind, that sounds a lot like Epiphany themes. You know, that's what we often talk about in that season. But certainly there's this kind of beautiful enlightenment that comes from God sending his son into this world. But I guess personally, as a preacher, if I were looking at this, I think my first instinct is to just take verse 68 and dwell on that visitation once more, the visitation and the redemption that comes. Although I could make a case for preaching the raising of the horn and some of the surprising things that means. And you do almost wonder what Zechariah thought that this horn of salvation was going to do. Did he also fall into those kind of shallow messianic political hopes for deliverance, or did he grasp the richer meaning that this horn of salvation is a baby in a manger, you know, and that this mighty king who's going to deliver us from our enemies is going to do so by the wood of the cross, and not the swaddling clothes of the manger, but the bands in which his dead body was wrapped. He certainly has something about that when he talks about this horn of salvation enabling us towards holiness and righteousness. But those are all, I mean, they're just really rich images that you can run with and develop. And you could pick this apart and find even more, but those are the kind of the three that I'm honed in on.
Yeah, the freeing us from our enemies, maybe, forgive me if you've mentioned this already, but that fits well also with the Galatians reading for today, that we are released from slavery, our status is transformed from slaves to sons. You hear similar language here from Zechariah, freeing us from our enemies, or even the Litrosin in verse 68, he visited his people and brought them redemption. Those themes are there too, certainly. I think it occurs to me that you could kind of approach this, you could focus on some of these key images and sort of the law and gospel themes in them. Or a different way to approach it is, especially if your listeners are not as familiar with Zechariah, what's going on here. They would have heard about John the Baptist, of course, in Advent, but telling the backstory of Zechariah a little bit and kind of his struggle with hope and losing hope and doubt and waiting and all those things, and why he's been silent for the last many months, kind of telling that as a backstory and relating some of the doubts of Zechariah to our listeners too. But then the fulfillment that comes and what he expresses in joy might be another way to approach preaching on the text. Phil?
Yeah, and if you're gonna do that backstory, there is an interesting dynamic here that Zechariah, he does not lead off with the fulfillment in his own life of this longed for son, but rather his burst of praise is actually about the visitation of Christ, and he acknowledges that he and his family have been swept up into this grand story of salvation history, and I think that's a neat. I mean, that's a neat thought and dynamic. And again, challenging the way that people nowadays think. I don't know if we envision ourselves so swept up into God's grand plan of salvation for this world as Zechariah clearly did here, he already lays down the pattern that John the Baptist is going to grow up and exemplify, that he must increase, I must decrease. What's really important here is the coming of Christ. And we all have our own roles to play, our moments on the stage, so to speak, but the real action is in this, the visitation of our God. I mean, yeah, I think that's an interesting dynamic you could run with.
Yeah. 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 There's a kind of, and this kind of, reminds us of the Magnificat too, Mary's song. There's similarities here, but right in both of these songs, there's sort of God's faithfulness to me as an individual, giving me a child. Zechariah expresses that near the end of the song. But yeah, then kind of this, if I could call it sort of a community fulfillment. He fulfilled the promises that he made to our family, to our ancestors long ago, the house of his servant David. But then, yeah, kind of this bigger master story. He's shining on those who live in darkness and in the shadow of death, kind of this worldwide. So that's what your words on the bigger picture, Phil, reminded me of that you see kind of Zechariah expressing his joy at the fulfillment on all three of those kind of individual, community, and the worldwide level, all those here. So that might be an interesting thought for preachers to consider too. Other thoughts that you can offer preachers, like ways you might encourage them to express gospel truths here, or points to emphasize, or points of application that are occurring to you? I know, Caleb, you mentioned a couple before, talking about hope and patience. Anything else that comes to mind or other themes by way of application or illustration that you could share with your listeners or preachers could? Phil?
Yeah, and I don't know how much this would actually make it into a sermon, but I'm still running with this, the backstory and being swept up into God's great plan of salvation. And I'm just looking down at the very bottom of my Greek New Testament, and this song is so deeply rooted in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just every verse is a reference to something in a salvation history from the past. And it's not surprising if you think about Zechariah as this priest, mm-hmm. he knows his Bible pretty well. So again, I don't know how much that would actually make it into a sermon, but it's certainly like the whole thing. God's got this one great big plan for his people throughout all time. And it all comes to a head at the birth of Christ. And this is the thing that, yeah, gives us endless hope and joy and this promise that no matter how long the time of waiting might be for us, all of his promises he's made to us ultimately are going to find their fulfillment because they already have in Christ.
Right. Yeah. And Zechariah has had the last 9 months to give extra thought to these Old Covenant promises because hasn't been able to speak. So he's had plenty of time to listen, right? And I can just picture him like he's worked all this out in his head, you know, and been sitting there unable to participate in the regular routines of life to some extent because he can't speak, but the words of God are just bouncing around in his mind, and the promises that, yeah, as a priest, he shared with people over the years and reminded people of, now kind of putting them all together in his life, which is a beautiful thought too. Yeah, any suggestions as we kind of bring things together, or preachers are thinking about doing this, for themes or key thoughts that you might highlight? I remember my vicar year, my supervising pastor preached on this, and I think he kind of focused on the story of Zechariah, and I think his theme was something like, you know, what happens when the dam breaks? And just the thought of Zechariah has all this, been meditating on the words of God for the last many months, and here he's finally able to speak. And as you mentioned, Phil, what does he point to? Not just himself and his own situation, but the dawning of a new day for the whole human race and this plan of God's plan to save the world. The first elements, you know, things are falling into place and coming to fruition here, which is kind of a captivating thought. Any other ideas for preachers or suggestions?
Yeah, I mean, I think something along the lines of the fullness of the gift more than outweighs the weight that led up to it.
Yeah, right.
Something like that.
Right. Yeah, the fulfillment and what is finally given or finally received outweighs the tension of waiting. And great, yeah, working with those themes. Yeah, I wanted to mention also to preachers, and maybe you've thought about this already, but the Song of Zechariah, the Benedictus by its Latin name, popular song, and many settings of it are out there. I think this has been associated historically with Matins. I think because of verses 78 and 79, the tender mercy of our God, by which the rising sun will come to us from heaven to shine on those living in darkness. So Matins, that old service that was observed before sunrise, and anticipating the rising of the sun, seems natural here. And maybe some preachers have worship planners have used this during Advent already on some of those John the Baptist Sundays, but there are versions of the Song of Zechariah in the hymnal and some extra ones on Service Builder only, if you are a Builder subscriber, some different musical settings. The Marty Haugen setting from his version of Morning Praise, he has a version of the Song of Zechariah. I think there's an Anglican chant version available on Service Builder as well. So it might be a time to actually put the words of Zechariah's song into people's mouths and sing them. A good opportunity to do that at some point in the service. All right. Well, any closing thoughts or additional things? If not, let's turn things over to preachers. The Lord bless you as you ponder these beautiful words of Zechariah and all their powerful images, gospel-rich images, and how to proclaim these wonderful truths to God's people.